freshman at Michigan State University. She joined the National Pesticide Information Center at Oregon State University. Oregon, we have a trend. And responded to thousands of phone inquiries about pests, pesticides, and adverse incidents. Working for the Oregon Department of Ag, Ms. Buell worked with state agencies, healthcare providers, and researchers to investigate and respond to pesticide incidents. She is coordinating activities for that center, and I'm pleased to welcome Kelsey Patrick.
Thank you for coming this morning. This is kind of a change of pace from the topics that we've been hearing about so far today, but I hope you find it interesting and feel free to ask questions even as we go through the presentation. There's a lot of data in the later slides. So I'll move quickly through the introductory information. My co-author, Dave Stone, is also among us this morning, and we have no relationships to disclose. We are going to talk a little bit about some off-label uses of pesticide products, but of course we don't recommend off-label uses. We do hear about those kind of things as a surveillance mechanism for incidents, but of course those uses are not recommended. I'm going to go through about 5 slides of context and then about 8 slides of results. So it's going to come pretty fast at you once the results start coming, but I want to give you a solid understanding of where these data come from. At the center, the main thing we do is provide information. Every day, even today, 10 hours a day, 7 days a week, we provide information about pesticides to the general public and professionals nationwide. We've been at OSU since 1995, and we operate under a cooperative agreement with the US EPA. In case you weren't aware, there's kind of an interesting distinction between the EPA, which regulates pesticides, and the FDA regulates drugs. They have very similar roles. They do surveillance for adverse reactions, and we're part of that system for doing surveillance for animal incidents and for human incidents as well, but today I'm talking about animal incidents. Our website is getting phenomenally popular. We're learning all about how to come up in the Google rankings and that sort of thing, so that's another major way that people find information about us. We manage emergencies in cooperation with poison centers. We're not veterinarians ourselves, so of course if something's happening in the moment, we would err on the side of getting that treatment taken care of right away instead of taking every piece of data that we might normally otherwise take. So the US EPA collects incident information from a lot of different sources. And the National Pesticide Information Center is just one. They also collect from pesticide manufacturers and the general public. So just to put it in context, they receive over 30,000 reports annually, and we're reporting about 10% of that. So what kind of examples for regulatory interventions? What do they do about it when they hear about adverse reactions that are occurring in animals or in humans, but in this case in animals? Here's 2 notable examples. In 2005 and 2006, they canceled a couple of products from the Hartz Mountain Corporation that were causing significant numbers of incidents. And we're going to get to see evidence of that cancellation in the data coming in later slides. Also, another example in the re-registration process. The statutes require EPA to re-register products every 10 years or so, every 15 years under the new program. And at that point, it gives them a moment to collect all the incident data, analyze that, and take mitigation measures. When metaldehyde was recently re-registered, they required that registrants add language to the labels, actually with a picture of a dog and a circle slash through it, so because the message wasn't coming across well. We were seeing a lot of animal incidents and dog fatalities. So just one more introductory slide to the data. I'm going to keep a picture of this reporter, the woman on the phone, just so you remember that these data are passively reported. We do not verify these data. It's just sort of a finger on the pulse of what people are telling us, but it's not verified. And how people are finding our number, about half of the people who call our center find our number on a product label. Our number is on a lot of product labels, but not all of them. Tend to be small companies. They don't have their own call centers, that sort of thing, so that gives you just an overall context. So putting it in context just one bit more, only about 16% of the calls that we receive are characterized as incidents, and we define an incident as an unintended exposure or an intended exposure with adverse effects. And about 1,780 animal entities were described in 2009 to give you a general idea of the overall numbers. So, 10 years of data, I think, is really exciting to see and put it all together in one place. So that I could have a full 10 years and include 2010, I defined the years, as you see up at the top, as October 1 to September 30, so that we could have 10 distinct 12-month periods. The number of animal incidents reported to NPIC has been steadily increasing, over double It's gone more than double in the last 10 years. And I put up some information to kind of explain a couple of those two peaks. One thing I'll draw your attention to, in 2009, do you recall seeing a lot of media coverage about the US and Canada increasing scrutiny on spot-on products? There was a press release, and we know that it was picked up at least 20 times. And our phone number and our website were included in that. So when we see a bump in 2009, and you'll see it in a couple of the other results slides as well, keep in mind there was a media blitz that year and a concomitant decrease that we might see in some active ingredients the following year. This is a very strong example of how labels can influence our data. In 2005, there was one company that makes mothballs that added our number to their label, and this is what happened to the incident data for animals. There's a common misconception with mothballs that can be placed around the home and garden to repel vertebrates. Sometimes those vertebrates, including domestic pets, will eat them, so they're not very good repellents. So that's one of the things that we're seeing. Okay, now the fun stuff. Organophosphate insecticides. When veterinarians hear about an insecticide poisoning, they often think of organophosphates right off the bat. But I'll draw your attention to this y-axis. Even going back as far as 10 years, it's relatively rare. Up to 25 per year on these active ingredients. I also draw your attention to chlorpyrifos and diazinon, the purple and the green that have a steady downtrend. They went through re-registration during that period, and almost all of the home uses were canceled. So we're seeing a lot fewer incidents related to domestic pets. There are still some incidents that we're seeing, especially for tetrachlorvinfos and malathion. They still sell those animal collars that have a volatile compound that evaporates and is right there next to the breathing places. So that occurs. And I'll look at the y-axis for this one. I'll come back. Organophosphates, pyrethroids. So this is the new important chemical class for animal poisonings in the United States. And right away when you look at this slide, there's a story to be told here on this M-shaped one. So I'll tell that story first. And that's for difenhydramine. It's also known as sumethrin. That's what the US EPA calls it. That's the active ingredient that was found in those Hartz products. So to tell the story, in 2003, a high number of incidents was being reported. The US EPA approached the registrant and said, what's going on? They said, well, people aren't following the label. So they strengthened those label language. They did a relabeling that even included stickering the products that were in the channels of trade, saying, hey, you gotta pay attention to these label language. In 2004, they determined that it wasn't good enough, it wasn't working enough, so they canceled two of those products in 2005. And in 2005, those cancellations created a lot of media attention. So that's how I'm interpreting this bump in 2005, was that the media was talking about these cancellations and we were getting more phone calls about those cancellations, and hey, that happened to me too. So that might explain that. But now, since the cancellations, difenhydramine has come in line with the other pyrethroids and sort of joined the local group. In five? Oh, wow, okay. So I'll move it right along, but and other things that, there's much more interesting stuff to discuss here in this slide, but I encourage you to ask questions about it later. So rodenticides. When we first think about rodenticides as a veterinarian, animal presenting, anticoagulants come to mind first off. The number one active ingredient on that slide shows zinc phosphide, not an anticoagulant at all, has a completely different mode of action. When it's ingested and it gets into the acidic environment in the stomach, it releases phosphine gas, which is corrosive, quickly turns into phosphoric acid, and does all kinds of bad damage. But vitamin K is not going to do anything for zinc phosphide incidents. So it's an important new active ingredient to pay attention to in the marketplace. Also, another one worth mentioning is bromethylin, which is not an anticoagulant, but sounds like brodifacoum and some of the other anticoagulants. It uncouples oxidative phosphorylation, has a completely different mode of action. So that's another one to pay attention to. They're not all anticoagulants anymore. Moving right along, this is interesting, slug and snail control products. In the Northwest, if you want to grow vegetables, you pretty much have to do something about slugs and snails. Metaldehyde was the industry standard up until recently. It went through re-registration in 2006 and 7. I told you about that label language. And look at the number of incidents plummet. I think that's a pretty interesting thing to see. Maybe two things happening. Maybe people are paying more attention to the label. Maybe people are switching to other products that have dog safe on the label. Those are the alternatives down here, iron phosphate and iron sulfate. I took a look at the incidents for iron phosphate in 2010. 68% of those were asymptomatic. but people are sensitized to the idea that flood control products can cause symptoms. If they see an exposure, they're calling us, but they may not have experienced symptoms yet at that time. Had to ingest quite a bit to start seeing that iron toxicity. But I think this is a pretty powerful example of the power of regulation, that we can actually measure the impact over time. So that's interesting. And here's the big one. Spot on product ingredients. So I told you about the media blitz in 2009, and you can certainly see it reflected in the data. And the top two that I want to point out, especially in 2009, this M-shaped one is the same one we already discussed for D-phenethrin back from the earlier part of this decade. But the top two are methoprene and piroproxifen. Both of them are insect growth regulators. Their mode of action is specifically, like, it interferes with the hormone system of an insect. So they're known to be very low in toxicity for animals, but they're often formulated with another insecticide, sometimes an organophosphate, sometimes a pyrethroid, other things. So when you see kind of a plus or in addition to on the label, that plus sometimes means that they've added an insect growth regulator to the formulation. So we're seeing quite a few incidents with those. I'm not sure how many of the symptoms are actually attributable to those active ingredients, but they're big in the marketplace right now. And it's worth pointing out as well, fipronil and imidacloprid, the active ingredients in Frontline and Advantage respectively. They're also found in other products. But when that media blitz took place, there was a common rumor in the marketplace that if you get your spot on products or your flea control products from the vet, if you pay more and go get those really good ones, then there will be no incidents. We're seeing incidents with those products as well. They're in keeping with some of the others. They didn't decrease at the same rate in 2010 that some of the others did. You see how most of them drop right back down. But fipronil is the purple, and imidacloprid is this green, and they didn't have that same concomitant drop at the same time in 2010. So we're still seeing incidents involved in those products as well. I'd really like to add a layer to this. I liked your discussion of layering, if you're still here, to layer onto this market share. How many of these products are actually being used, and what percentage are resulting in some kind of adverse incident. So there's much more to be done to understand the data in its complexity, but it is great to see a snapshot over time of the kind of active ingredients that we're seeing. So just in conclusion, among the pesticide-related incidents reported to NPIC, we're seeing that pyrethroid incidents are more common than the organophosphate incidents. Zinc phosphide incidents were more common than incidents related to all of the other anticoagulants combined in recent years. And I'm not aware of any specific labels that actually include our number for zinc phosphide. We're just seeing a lot of those. And as metaldehyde incidents decrease, iron phosphate incidents are increasing, although many of those incidents are asymptomatic type exposure incidents, unintended exposures without symptoms. So those are some of the major themes that I'll point out. And just remind you as well, we provide information 7 days a week. We hear from a lot of veterinarians who have questions about toxicology, and we're able to hopefully help them and provide assistance in crisis management. And we also have a special incident reporting portal just for veterinarians. There is a weakness in the great big data set that is reported by the general public passively. Anyone can submit a report, but this new system that we have put up at this URL is just for veterinarians, and the data are highly regarded by the EPA because they obviously come from more credible sources. So I encourage you to use that, and I brought business cards if you don't want to write it down.